it's a hackneyed old question, but nevertheless, like to throw it at you. Typecasting actors worry about. You don't worry about this sort of typecasting, surely, do you?
No, it's not been a problem for me. I've discovered on this trip that because much of the work that I've done in the States over the last 11 or 12 years has not been seen here, there are people who have the impression that all I do is Mr. Spock in Star Trek, because that's pretty much all they've seen me do here, with one or two exceptions here and there. I have had a wonderful career ever since this whole thing started 16 years ago. We did 3 seasons of Star Trek, and then I went into 2 years of Mission Impossible, and then started freelancing and really spreading around, doing a lot of interesting kinds of work. Came here to do a film with Susan Hampshire called Baffled. Was in Spain making a Western with Yul Brynner. Did a movie in the States called Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which was on here fairly recently. Last fall, I was in Israel doing a film with Ingrid Bergman called A Woman Called Golda, about Golda Meir, in which I played her husband. Went to China to do a very nasty character, heavy, in Marco Polo, a 10-hour miniseries for the States. A lot of interesting work to do.
Tell you what I found fascinating, and it was a side of you I didn't know about. I was looking through some of your theater credits, and I see you've done The King and I,
yes.
My Fair Lady,
yes.
Oliver.
True.
Pretty fair singing voice.
Fair. Yeah, right. I guess fair is the way to describe it. I don't consider myself a real singer in that sense. I mean, I'm not an Alfred Drake or one of those people with a glorious voice. But the roles that I've been given to do in musical comedy, I can get away with a character voice. I've done Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof and Oliver, as you mentioned, and Arthur and Camelot. Parts that don't necessarily call for brilliant singing. I don't think Richard Burton has a brilliant singing voice, for example, and he does Arthur Camelot very well.
So that's sort of the Rex Harrison, you talk your way through,
right,
in tune.
That's right, exactly, exactly.
I got Graham Bullock with me, who's not only a mate from way back, but a great Star Trek fan. Pull in on the microphone now,
oh,
mate.
Oh, thank you.
You were at a big Star Trek convention here in Brum.
Guest of honour was William Shatner. And it went on for the whole weekend, Friday night till Sunday evening.
And you met him? You like him?
Yes. Oh, yes. Most of the time he was on stage. He was on stage for about 2 hours, did his part of his one-man show, a little bit of that, and answering questions. And he was excellent, yes. He held the audience, well, of course, they were all Trekkies anyway, but he held them for a couple of hours, no problem.
You obviously get on very well with him, Leonard.
Oh, yeah, we're good friends, yeah.
And have been...
That's my admiral.
Any thoughts that you'd like to put to Leonard? You've been a fan for so long, mate.
I was looking through the credits, as Ed was earlier, and I came across Zombies of the Stratosphere, which I think they showed on TV recently.
One of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah,
an amazing piece of work.
Of it.
I mean, it was extraordinary. It was really, I mean, a worldwide hit. took several stars and made unknowns out of them. Wonderful stuff.
That was one of the first science fiction things you did?
Yes, it was. Yes. It was, I tell you, when it was done, I think around 1951, just about 30 years ago, made by Republic Studios, who used to do that kind of Saturday afternoon serials and the very fast little low-budget westerns. And it was called Zombies of the Stratosphere and was later released in the last few years. It's been re-released in the States and shows up late at night sometimes, called Satan's Satellites. Obviously a much better title. I mean, you can tell the difference right away. And it was a wonderful story. It was a story about myself and another alien, two of us, came to Earth to take over the planet with a pickup truck and a couple of 45s. And we did quite a job of it, too.
Buck Rogers on wheels.
That's right.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
No, they've never showed it in this country. They showed about 10 minutes of it on TV recently.
Did they really?
I'm not sure what it's relating to now, but they showed a bit of it, yes. And
I haven't seen it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, before we take another question from you, the Star Trek fans are on the lines. Can I ask you to put earphones on around the studio?
Yeah.
And we'll go to Paul. Where are you calling me from, Paul?
I'm calling you from Birmingham. Good evening.
Yes, hello, Paul.
Hello. Well, I was just wondering, with the terrific following that's grown up around all that is Star Trek, I think even from when the show first went out, while it was still being made, why did we have to wait so long for the Enterprise to sail again after the third ship, third two is finished?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure that I can give you a definite answer, but I think for quite a while the series was in reruns in the States and here and other parts of the world, I'm not sure that the studio really believed that there was that much of a market for new product. And I suspect that about five or whatever years ago it was, that Star Wars came out and did such tremendous business that they decided that we'd better get cracking and do some Star Trek, because obviously there was a market for this kind of product. And now, I don't think we'll be waiting quite that long.
It's going to be films rather than television shows.
For the time being, I would say so. I would think as long as they find that there's the market and people are interested in seeing the films and will pay the money to see the films, they'll do the films. Mm-hmm. If that should change, then I don't know what they would do. But for the time being, I would say the films, yes.
Could you tell me if you've had any funny experiences on Star Trek?
Oh, a lot. A lot. You don't expect me to tell them on the air, do you? I would get shut off here.
Well, listen, what's to lose?
Yeah, we've had our share of good times, you know. We've had our share of good times. I'm the one that has the sense of humor. Nobody else on the show has a sense of humor. I'm the only one.
They catch you out, sir. Don't they do some pretty wicked things to you sometimes?
They try, but they're just silly, you know.
Graham's got a few stories he heard from William Shatner.
Really? What did he tell you?
Well, it was just the one story he told us about, which brought a howl of laughter from around the convention. That was about the bicycle that you bought.
My bicycle?
Yeah, and the one
he should
stole.
Be ashamed of himself, Shatner. He really should. He stole my bicycle.
Who's going to tell us the story?
He hid my bicycle. Well, you can go ahead and tell the story.
Well, crikey, yeah. Well, okay. apparently you bought a bike to try and beat everyone down to the mess hall.
That's right.
So because they all used to walk, and you bought a bike to get there before everyone else.
True.
So they thought, this is not fair. So they stole the bike. Did they chain it up as well, I believe?
They did all of those things.
They stole it.
They stole it and hidden. When I found it, the next time they chained it.
That's right.
And then, after I got the chain cut loose, I thought, well, I really have it fixed now. I don't know if this is what Bill told you, but I had my car parked right outside the studio entrance. So I took the bike out and put it inside my car and locked it in there, and I thought, now they can't get to it. And the next thing I knew, they were coming out with a hydraulic lift to take my car away, and I thought, I just better get rid of this bicycle.
I would like to ask you, Leonard, about the Hollywood life. We hear about the Hollywood life.
Is it
as glamorous?
It is something
unreal.
It's absolutely indescribable.
Now you serious? Are you sending me up?
What do you want to know? I'll tell you everything. I'll tell you all the inside secrets. What do you want to know?
You see these great shows on television, the Academy Awards ceremonies,
yes,
and the people arriving.
Yes.
Is it as we see it? Is this really going on, or is it really, like anywhere else, basically a bitch fight?
Oh, no. What you're seeing is happening. It's happening. And those are very important events in the community. The Emmy Awards, the Academy Awards, the Grammy Awards, Golden Globe Awards. Those are happening, and the people involved are there and very excited, and it's a very glamorous event. because you do get to see a collection of people from the business that don't normally come together in one place at one time. So it's a special evening, but those things aren't going on every night of the week. I mean, the thing that most people don't realize is that when we are filming, the work is hard, and it's long hours. It can be a 10 or 12-hour day easily, and sometimes longer than that. So you're leaving at the crack of dawn and driving to work, and there at the studio all day or out on location, drive back and tired, get something to eat and study for the next day's work and go to sleep. On the occasion when there is an event like that, we try to be there.
If you're walking the streets in America, do you get attention? Do people pay attention
sure,
to you?
Sure, sure.
You get a lot of that?
Yeah.
How sure. do you react to it?
Well, I enjoy it. It doesn't bother me. In my business, if they don't recognize you, you've got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
The recognition is important because it means opportunity. It means that people are interested in you. They know who you are. And if I go out in a film or a play or whatever, they see my name up on the marquee, maybe they'll buy a ticket.
Mm.
So it's important that people do recognize me.
What do you think the reasons are that people just aren't going to the pictures as much as they used to?
I don't know. I've been hearing a lot about that here. In the States right now, business is very, very good. Right now it is. Now, last Christmas season, which is normally a very big season in the States, was very bad. And everybody was saying, well, it's the recession and unemployment and high interest rates and the economy is a mess and so forth. I'm not convinced I'm sure that's part of it. But I also suspect that last Christmas we had a lot of pictures out that people didn't care about seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, this summer, there are a lot of films out that people do want to see. And they're going. They're going in very, very large numbers. So I'm hopeful that when some of these pictures start coming here, you'll feel the same thing.
Yeah, so you won't go along with the thinking that TV is killing the cinema?
No, we thought that in the States. We have a lot more TV than you have here. I mean, we in Los Angeles, for example, you can flip through your dial and have your choice of 16 or 18 channels. You can see all kinds of movies, all kinds of Las Vegas-type entertainment. You can see the television series that are on. You can see news 24 hours a day. There's a national 24-hour-a-day news network on television, very good, too, with correspondents from all over the world. All kinds of TV to
plus
watch.
Plus cable television.
That's right.
And
but people
television.
Do want to go out and see a good film. And when they come along, I think people will see them. And I think we've got them now. I think there's a good crop of films coming that will help your film industry here a lot.
Anyway, we got John on the line to talk to us. John, where are you calling us from? Yes, John, go ahead.
What was the first part you ever played in your acting career?
The first part I ever played, I was 8 years old, and I played Hansel in a production of Hansel and Gretel.
Steve's on the line. Where are you calling me from, Steve?
From Streatley. Hello, Leonard.
Hello.
You meet quite a lot of weird and wonderful alien characters in Star Trek.
Yes.
Assuming that man was in a position at the moment for interplanetary travel, on the scale that's portrayed in Star Trek, and you had the opportunity to do this in real life, how would you feel about it?
I probably would avoid that. I've been hearing too much about the astronauts who go up in the space shuttle getting airsick. I don't particularly enjoy that stuff, you know. I'd rather do it in the films.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting question. I do tend to think that... that there is alien life out there somewhere. because I think there are so many solar systems like ours, thousands of them, and hundreds of thousands of planets like ours rotating around those solar systems, that I think the chances are very good that there's somebody out there. We may or may not contact them in our lifetime, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure they're out there.
One other very brief question.
Yes.
How is the illusion presented on the screen of the Enterprise traveling through space, particularly in orbit around planets?
Well, as a rule, it's done with models. They have several models of the starship, the Enterprise starship, in various sizes. I don't know how many there are now. I remember when we were doing the series, we had two. There was one that was 3 feet. And one that was 12 feet. Now, the three-footer is in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., in the Air and Space Museum. I think they've built some new models for the movies that we're doing now. Those models are actually hung from wires and rotated around a globe that's painted and whatever, sculpted to look like a planet, and they do that on a separate soundstage where we're not involved. Those are done by the special effects people.
Okay, well, I hope there's many more episodes of Star Trek.
I hope so, too.
Very enjoyable.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Best of luck in the future.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And
Nick from Maypole is on the line. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Ed. Can you ask him possibly...
you can where... ask. He's here. He's listening to you.
Hello.
Hello. Could you tell me where you devised the signature tune from, please?
I'm sorry?
The signature tune.
The signature tune? What about... What was the question? What about it?
Where was it
devised? The tune. How did you devise it up?
Oh, well, it was written by Alexander Courage. You mean ba 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 ba? Is that the one you mean? Da 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 da
da da da da da.
Written by Alexander Courage.
Yes, question, thanks.
Okay, Nick?
Okay, thank you.
There you are. You are wiser. Thanks a lot, mate. Michael from Dorridge is on the line. Hello, Mike.
Hello?
Yes, Michael.
Leonard?
Yes?
I was wondering, when you think how many science fiction concepts were put into Star Trek, I was wondering if you had any interest in science fiction yourself.
Well, of course, sure. Sure do. Sure do. As much as I possibly could. I read a lot of science fiction material. And I've sure been in my share of it, as much as anybody else, I guess, ever has. Sure.
Any interest in James Blish, who wrote the...
Yes, good writer. He wrote some of our Star Trek episodes, sure. Yeah. Sure. We had some of the best. We had Blish, we had Matheson, we had Harlan Ellison, Ted Sturgeon, some very good people. Very good people.
Yeah.
Okay, mate?
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Nice hearing from you. Over to Northfield now. And hello, Steve.
Hello there.
Yes, Steve.
Hello.
Hello there. As Mr. Spock in Star Trek, you play a science officer.
Yes.
Are you interested in science?
Yes, I am interested in science.
And astronomy as well?
Yes, I am.
Because I did watch the series In Search Of.
Yeah. Where did you see that?
On the television.
Here?
Going back a few months now.
Oh, really? Oh, good.
But is there any more of that series coming up?
Well, we did. I don't know how many you saw here. In fact, this is the first time I've heard that they were playing in the UK. I didn't realize that. We did a total of 144 shows of In Search Of. I don't know how many you have played here, but I suspect that you haven't seen all of them yet.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'd just like to say as well, I think you're a great actor.
Thank you.
You play a very good part, and I've seen you in many other roles.
Thank you very much.
You're a very good actor.
And may I tell you, you have fine taste, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Steve, well, thanks a lot. He's got a great taste in radio programs. Right. He doesn't listen to rubbish. Let's talk to Sean at Quinton. Hi, Sean. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Mr. Spock.
Hello.
I've got a question.
Yes.
Do you think that it would be possible in the near future or later to beam people around in space?
To beam people around in space? Is that what you said? Was that the question?
Yes, yeah. Sir.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. Beaming people up and down to the ship, for example, and back down to Earth, to be able to do that really would be pretty, pretty tough. You'd have to be able to, you'd have to find a way to transform all of those molecules of the human body into energy and then send that energy through the air and then reform them in exactly the same order someplace else, or you'd get some very strange-looking people on the other end.
Yeah.
And I think it might be pretty tough to do. Pretty tough to do. But a lot of other things on the Star Trek series, by the way, and the movies, are really based on scientific possibility. So I would imagine that a lot of the things that you have seen us do will come true in sometime in the future.
Yes.
Okay, Sean?
Yes.
Thank you for calling.
Can you say hello to my sister, please?
Can you what?
Can say hello to my sister.
Hello to my sister.
Yes.
What's her name?
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Right, thank you.
How old are you?
5.
You're 5. Have you seen Star Trek?
Yes.
Oh, good. Do you like it?
Yes.
What do you like about it? Who do you like? Which do you like? Is there anything you like about it? What's your name?
Kelly.
Thank you very much for calling. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Do you know who you're talking to?
No.
No. Well, I'm the person who plays Mr. Spock on Star Trek. Do you know who that is?
No.
I love it.
Well, what a super call that was.
I love it. Thanks so much.
Ta-da, darling. Ta-da, Kerry. Thanks, Sean. If you've got anybody else you'd like us to talk to, you must bring him along. Paul of Solihull. Hello, Paul.
Hello there.
You know who you're talking to.
Hello, Leonard.
Hello. How are you?
Actually, what I'd like to know is that when you made the first Star Trek film and you actually walked back on the set of the Enterprise, did it seem like 10 years ago since you made the series, or did it just seem like yesterday?
For about 5 minutes, it seemed as though we'd been apart for a while, and then suddenly it was as if we had never stopped making Star Trek. It was the strangest experience. It was like a bunch of family who hadn't seen each other for a while, and it just took the first very few minutes to recapture a feeling of as though we'd been working together all those years.
Had anyone changed much, or...?
Everybody else has gotten older except me. Everybody else. It's amazing. Amazing. I mean, Bill Shatner's older, and Jimmy Doohan's older, and Dee Kelly. They're all older. I'm the only one that hasn't changed a bit.
Did you mind all the publicity that you must get from Star Trek? I mean, it must sort of invade your personal life.
Well, you have to expect that in my business. If you're going to be a public performer, you have to expect that there's going to be a certain amount of loss of privacy, and you'll learn to deal with it. Otherwise, get out of the kitchen if you can't stand the heat, right?
Well, thank you for your call.
Instead of saying goodbye, live long and prosper.
Same to you. Thank you.
Okay,
all the best. And Leonard Nimoy, can I thank you very much?
Very nice. Thank you.